The Omnipotent Magician Who Could Not Be Alone, A Tale for Grown-Ups. Do you know why old folk tell stories and legends? Because legends are the cleverest thing in the world. Everything in the world changes, but only real legends remain. Legends are wisdom, and in order to tell them, one needs to have great knowledge and to see things that others do not. For that, one needs to have lived a lot. That's why only old people know how to tell legends. As is written in the greatest, oldest magical book, an old person is someone who has acquired wisdom. Children love to hear legends because they have imagination and brains to envisage everything, not just what others see. If a child grows up and still sees what others do not, he becomes wise and clever. He acquires wisdom. And because he sees what others do not, he knows that imagination is real. He remains as a child, a wise child, as is written in the greatest, oldest magical book, the Zohar. There once was a magician, great and noble and good-hearted, with all the attributes usually given in children's books. But because he was so good-hearted, he did not know who to share it with. He did not have anyone to pour his affections on, to play with and to spend time with, to think of. He also needed to feel wanted, for it's very sad to be alone. What should he do? He thought he should make a stone, just a small one, but beautiful, and perhaps that would be the answer. I will stroke the stone and feel that there's something constantly by my side, and we'll both feel good because it's very sad to be alone. He waved his wand, and in an instant, there was a stone exactly as he wanted. He began to stroke the stone, to hug it and to talk to it, but the stone didn't respond. It remained cold and did nothing in return. Whatever he did to the stone, it remained the same unfeeling object. This did not suit the magician at all. How can the stone not respond? He tried creating some more stones, then rocks, hills, mountains, land, the earth, the moon, and the galaxy. But they were all the same, nothing. He still felt sad and all alone. In his sadness, he thought that instead of stones, he'd make a plant that would blossom beautifully. He'd water it, give it some air, some sun, play it some music, and the plant would be happy. And then they'd both be content because it's sad to be alone. He waved his wand, and in an instant, there was a plant exactly as he wanted. He was so happy he began to dance around it, but the plant didn't move. It didn't dance with him or follow his movements. It only responded to what the magician gave it in the simplest terms. If he gave it water, it grew. If he did not, it died. It was not enough for such a good-hearted magician who wanted to give all of his heart. He had to do something more because it's very sad to be alone. He then created all sorts of plants, all sorts of sizes, fields, forests, orchards, plantations, and groves, but they all behaved the same way as the first plant, and again he was sad in his loneliness. The magician thought and thought. What should he do? Create an animal. Well, what sort of animal? A dog. Yes, a cute little dog that would be with him constantly. He'd take him for walks, and the dog would jump and prance and run along. And when he came home to his palace, or rather, being a magician, his castle, the dog would be so pleased to see him that he'd run to greet him. They would both be happy because it's very sad to be alone. He waved his wand, and there was a dog just as he wanted. He began to take care of the dog. He fed it, gave it to drink, and stroked it. He even ran with it and washed it and took it out for walks. But a dog's love is summed up in being next to his owner, wherever he is. The magician was sad to see that the dog couldn't reciprocate, even if he plays with him so well and goes everywhere with him. A dog cannot be his true friend. It cannot appreciate what he does for it. It doesn't comprehend his thoughts, desires, or how much trouble he takes for it. But that was what the magician wanted. So he made other creatures, fish, fowl, mammals, all to no avail. None of them understood him. It was very sad to be alone. The magician sat and thought. Then he realized that in order to have a true friend, he must be someone who will look for the magician, will want him very much, will be like the magician, able to love him, understand him, resemble him, be his partner. A partner, a true friend. He would have to be someone who is close to him, who understands what he gives him, who can reciprocate and give him everything in return. Magicians also want to love and be loved. Then they could both be content, because it's very sad to be alone. The magician then thought about creating a man. He could be his true friend. He could be like him. He would merely need help to be like him. Then the two of them would feel good, because it's very sad to be alone. But in order for them to feel good, he must first feel lonely, to be sad without the magician. The magician waved his wand again and made a man in the distance. The man didn't feel that there was a magician who had made all the stones, the plants, the hills, the fields, and the moon, the rain, and the wind. The entire world filled with beautiful things, even computers and football, that made him feel good and lacking nothing. The magician, on the other hand, continued to feel sad that he was alone. The man didn't know there was a magician who had made him, loved him, was waiting for him, and said that together they would feel good because it's so sad to be alone. Yet how would a man who feels content, who has everything, even a computer and football, who does not know the magician, want to find him, get acquainted with him, become close to him, to love him, to be his friend, and to tell him, "Come, we will both feel good because it's very sad to be alone without you"? A person knows only what is in his vicinity and does what everyone in his surroundings does, speaks what they speak of, wants what they want, not to offend, to act nicely for presents, a computer, football. How could he possibly know there is a magician who is sad to be alone? But the magician is good-hearted and constantly looks out for the man, and when the time is ripe, he waves his wand and calls to the man's heart very quietly. The man thinks he's looking for something, and he doesn't realize it's the magician who's calling him. "Come, we will both feel good, because it's very sad to be alone without you." Then the magician waves his wand again, and the man feels him. He begins to think of him, to think that it would be good together, because it's very sad to be alone, without the magician. Another wave of the wand, and the man feels there is a magic tower full of goodness and might, in which the magician waits for him, and only there they will feel good because it's very sad to be alone. But where is the tower? How can he reach it? Which is the way? He asks himself, puzzled and confused, how can he meet the magician? He keeps feeling the wave of the wand in his heart, and he cannot sleep. He constantly sees magicians and mighty towers and can't even eat. That's what happens when a person wants something so very much and they can't find it, and it's sad to be alone. But in order to be like the magician, wise, great, noble, and good-hearted, loving, and a friend, a wave of the wand is not enough. A man must learn to make wonders himself. So the magician, secretly and subtly, gently and innocuously, leads him to the greatest, oldest magical book, the Book of Zohar, and shows him the way to the mighty tower. The man grasps it so swiftly to meet the magician, to meet a friend, and to tell him, "Come, we will be good together because it's very sad to be alone." There is a high wall surrounding the tower, and many guards repel him, not letting them be together and feel good. The man despairs. The magician hides away in the tower behind locked gates. The wall is high. The guards vigilantly repel. Nothing can pass. What will happen? How can they be together, feel good together, because it's so sad to be alone? Every time the man weakens and almost despairs, he suddenly feels a wave of the wand, and he rushes to the walls again and tries to circumvent the guards, no matter what. He wants to break into the gates, reach the tower, climb the rungs of the ladder, and reach the magician. And every time he surges forward and moves nearer to the tower and the magician, the guards become more vigilant, stronger, and arduous, mercilessly flaying him. But each round, the man becomes braver, stronger, and wiser. He learns to accomplish all sorts of tricks himself, to invent things only a magician can. Every time he's pushed back, he wants the magician more, feels his love for him more, and wants more than anything else in the world to be with the magician, see his face, because it's very good to be together. And even if he's given everything in the world without the magician, he would feel alone without him. Then, when he can no longer bear to be without him, the gates of the tower open, and the magician, his magician, rushes towards him and says, "Come, we will be good together, because it's very sad to be alone." And ever since, they became faithful friends, closely acquainted, and there's no finer pleasure than that between fellow men forever into infinity. They feel so good together, they never remember, even occasionally, how sad it was to be alone. The sequence of the screens conceals the Creator from us. These screens exist in ourselves and in our souls. However, everything outside of ourselves and our souls with interfering screens is the Creator Himself. We can only perceive that minute part of the outer surroundings that can permeate our screen. All that is outside of us is completely lost to our perception. In the same manner, in this world, we see only those objects that are reflected on the inner surface of our eye, since they fall within the range of our vision. Our knowledge of the spiritual worlds is the result of the perceptions and sensations gained by the souls of the Kabbalists and passed on to us. However, their achievements were also restricted by the range of their spiritual vision. Hence, all the spiritual worlds known to us exist only in relation to the souls. Given the aforesaid, the entire creation can be divided into three parts. The Creator. We cannot discuss Him due to the fact that we can only judge those phenomena that fall within the range of our spiritual perception after passing through the interfering screens. The purpose of creation. This is our starting point. That is the point from which we can begin to explore the design of the Creator. Some argue that its essence centers on pleasing the creations. We cannot say anything else besides the above in regard to the Creator's relation with us, for lack of information. The Creator wishes that we should feel His influence upon us as pleasure, and so He created our sensory perceptions in such a way as to permit us to sense His bearing upon us as pleasure. But since all perception is accomplished by the souls, it's senseless to talk about the other worlds without connecting this subject to the ones that perceive these worlds, for the simple reason that without the perception of the souls, the other worlds do not exist. The interfering screens that stand between us and the Creator, in fact, present these worlds. Olam derives from the word alama, which means concealment. The worlds exist only for the purpose of transmitting even a small amount of the pleasure or the light emanating from the Creator to the souls. And finally, the souls. These are entitled generations by the Creator that perceive themselves as independently existing. Moreover, this feeling is highly subjective and essentially translates into the soul, that is, our individual self, specifically made in this manner by the Creator. In reality, we are no more than an integral part of Him. The entire path of a person from his initial stage and to the final stage at which he completely merges with the Creator in all his qualities can be divided into five stages, each of which can in turn be divided into five substages that in turn are further comprised of five substages. In total, there are 125 stages. Every person at a particular stage experiences the same feelings and influences as every other person that finds himself at the same stage and possesses the same spiritual sensory organs, and hence can feel the same as everyone else at the same stage. Similarly, every person that is found in our world possesses the same perceptual organs that yield identical perceptions, and therefore do not allow the perceptions of other worlds. In accordance with the above, the books on Kabbalah can be understood only by those who reach the stage of the author, since then the author and the reader will have common experiences, similarly to the readers and the authors that describe the events of this world. The perception of the closeness of the Creator, spiritual gratification, and the enlightenment that one receives from unification with Him, from the gained understanding of His wishes and the laws of His dominion, the so-called lights of the Creator, the perception of Him, all of these the soul receives from the spiritual worlds. The feeling of being drawn closer to the Creator is perceived gradually as we advance on our spiritual path. That's the reason for perceiving the revelation of the Creator in a new light at every different phase of our journey. For those that are only able to grasp our world, the Bible appears as a collection of laws and historical events that describe the behavior of human beings in this world. However, those that are more advanced along their spiritual path begin to perceive the spiritual actions of the Creator behind the names of the objects and actions of our world. From all the aforesaid, it becomes clear that in creation there are two participants, the Creator and the human being, that himself was created by the Almighty. All the other visions that arise before a person, be it the perception of our world or even the perception of higher worlds, are only the different phases of revelation and disclosure of the Creator on the way to becoming closer to a person.